All right, Al, you got to 8:15, so you better get sober quick. You had about 40 minutes. Let's welcome Al to the podium, huh?
Thank you, Armando. That was really, really heartfelt. My name's Al. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Al.
And I'd like to welcome Aiden, Ivan, Paul, and Serena. It's all written down right here. I don't have that good of a memory. And I'd like to congratulations to the birthday people. And my sobriety date is 8/24/93. And I never thought I'd get past the first 5 years. So anyways, I have a story. I don't like to tell it. I like to get more into recovery. And I brought the books that I try to read on a daily basis. And, where do I start? Well, I've led a couple of meetings since I moved here, and I've shared about 15 brief minutes, and, you know, I'll start from there. I grew up in West Berkeley, rougher part of town, and my dad left when I was 2 years old. And I had two brothers that were 8 and 9 years older than me. And, you know, I've spoken a million times and I never get nervous. And I'm a little nervous. I really am. And it's because, you know what, I'm comfortable around my people. And you guys are definitely my people. You're just a new set of people. And then these guys are all the guys that are at the men's stag that I go to, you know. And of course, my ego is telling me they came for me. Okay. I know they came for me.
So, you think he has a big ego?
Okay. And so, anyways, man, you know what? I'm glad you guys are here. I really am. And hopefully I'll get to know you guys. You know, I have been coming here at noon about once a week, different days of the week, and I like this fellowship. I like Santa Maria, and, you know, I have to share my story. So anyways, when I was growing up, you know, I was made fun of a lot for not having a dad. Back in those days, everybody had a dad, a mom and a dad, a mom and a dad, okay? And I was made fun of a lot. One day, this kid was chasing me home from school, and my brother and my mother were standing on the front porch, and they seen this kid chasing me, and they addressed it, and they pushed me back out the door, and they said, "You go take care of that." And they said, "If you want to get back in this door, you go take care of that." You know, I come from a Hispanic family, and I was taught to be very macho, and, you know, take care of things when I was growing up. And so I went back, and as scared as I was, I took care of it because I needed to get back in and I needed to eat my rice and beans, you know? And we had a lot of rice and beans. And so I did that, and I think that was one of the biggest mistakes my mom and my brother could ever make, because I didn't see it as taking care of myself. You know, I seen it totally different. All of a sudden, I became a tough guy, you know. And I went from beating up that kid to beating up other kids to leaving my neighborhood with other kids in my neighborhood. And we would go to other neighborhoods, and it was divided up pretty good. You know, the Hispanics lived over here in West Berkeley, and, you know, the Chinese lived over here, and the Italians lived over there, and the Blacks lived over there. We used to like to go from Berkeley to Oakland. And you had to fight your way through all these neighborhoods to get there. And man, was that a blast. You know, it was like, all right, you know. But back then, you know, we didn't fight with guns and stuff. I'd like to say we didn't fight with knives, but I ended up in the hospital with a knife wound. And I did that, and the more I did that, the more I just started building this false courage. You know, but it was a way for me to block out what people were saying to me. You know, I still heard it all the time. Why don't you have a father? Everybody else has a father. So I get in trouble at school. I go to see this coach. I was in the, I think I was in sixth grade when all this happened. And, you know, the coach, all these kids, all the bad kids got sent to him. And they sent me to him. And I really didn't think I was a bad kid. And he was a baseball coach. And he had these kids out there. And so he, this hot shot pitcher, he told me, throw the ball. And I think he was trying to scare me. And he threw the ball to me, and I hit it over the bungalow. And never played before. Played with my brothers every once in a while. We'd play, and they like to hit me with the ball a lot. So, so I did it. He says, do it again. I did it again. And he told me to be down at James King Park in Berkeley that Saturday. And I went down there, and they had tryouts. And like a week later, I was the number one pick. And I hadn't fit in, man. You know, I hadn't fit in. You know, I was always fighting that battle to fit in, you know, always looking at that kid and his dad, and, you know, that kid and his dad. And at the awards dinner, I was the kid with no dad, you know, and I got a lot of awards. And that just haunted me, man. And I was the first pick, and that was the first dose of a little self-esteem I ever had, you know. And I played ball, and I was very, very good at this game that I never played. You know, and fast forward, I was in high school, and I had scouts knocking on the doors, and you know, my uncles would come over, because my mother didn't know anything about baseball, you know. She came to two awards ceremonies, and I gave my trophies to her, you know, and she was, oh, that's good, mijo, that's good, you know. You know, she didn't know if it was baseball, soccer, or basketball, you know. You know, but she always pushed me. You know, I had a very loving mom, all 4'11" of her. You know, she was very loving, very tough. And So anyways, I graduated from school, and when I graduated from school, I got a contract to play baseball. And that was my first drunk experience. You know, I was the new guy, and I went to Tacoma, Washington, and I was playing ball, and I was drinking heavily, and I was enjoying life, man. You know, like Bill said, man, I had arrived, you know, and I was playing. And all I could think of, man, I'm going to get my mom a new house, and I'm going to get her out of that neighborhood. I'm going to do this and that for her, you know, and I'm going to go back there. I'm going to show those people how wrong we were. You know, this book taught me that I had all the wrong thinking. And so, you know, the rookies, they have to do, you know, all the work. You know, you got to go get the booze. So it was my turn to go get the booze. And I was drunk getting the booze. And I got the booze, and I was stumbling. And I wasn't even of age to buy the booze. But if you played ball in Tacoma, and they knew that you played for that team, you could buy booze anywhere. And I walked out in front of a car, looked up, seen the car coming. I was so drunk, I thought that car was far away from me, and I walked right in front of it. And boom. That wasn't my career. When I played for a class organization, they gave me a chance to come back. But when you lose a fraction of a second in baseball, it's over. You know, in any sport, it's over. And so I come back, you know, and one more time, I'm a failure. You know, I'm a failure in life. And I come back to Berkeley, and the only thing I had going for me is I was offered some pretty good jobs. You know, and Chevrolet place had sponsored me, and a barbecue place had sponsored me, and a couple other places, you know, and they had my picture on the barbecue, in the restaurant, on the wall, you know, and all that did, man, was for years, you know, into my 20s, I would go back in that barbecue place, and I'd see that picture, and I just wanted to take that picture down, and I wanted to hide it so somebody wouldn't say, is that you? just, I mean, I felt so ashamed when I seen the picture. And, you know, and one more time, I didn't fit in, you know, but I got a good job. You know, I came back, I got a good job, and I got with the wrong people. You know, I knew a lot of the wrong people. And so when I hooked up with the wrong people, I did what people that hook up with wrong people do. We do wrong things, you know, and I did wrong things, and I did wrong things on a large scale, very, very, very large scale. And I met a guy, and I was working for the Santa Fe Railway at that time. And at that time, they had a call board, and you can work as much as you want. And you only have to put in 2 days, and you can take 14 days off. And you can go back to work for two more days and make 14 days off. Well, seeing that I was making way more money at my other job than the railroad job, you know, and because I was an entrepreneur, you know, and I was going to show everybody I can make more money than you. And, you know, I took that illegal job, and I went a far ways in that job. You know? And I met a lot of dirty people, and I did a lot of dirty things that I'm not proud of. And man, I hate telling this story. And I got arrested quite a few times. But every time I got arrested, it was for alcohol, other substances, you know, and violence. And when I wasn't drinking, I wasn't a violent person. And the more I drank, I was a bar drinker, and when I went to bars, I drank. And when I first went there, I was like, hey, hey guys, how's it going, you know? And you know, I was like Norm when I walked in the bar, you know? You know, it was like cheers. Everybody loved you in there, you know, because everybody was drinking, you know. And I went in there, and I chased women at first, and I loved women. And you know what? It's a progressive disease. And it went from chasing women and loving women, forgetting all about women, and going there to fight. You know, and that's how my life, you know, I mean, that's just how it evolved, you know. And, you know, after I got stabbed, shortly after that, you know, I spent 17 days in the ICU. My mother told me that I passed away. And this is hard, you know, because all I see is her face, and she's passed away. She's passed away a few years ago, and all I seen was her face and the harm that I did to her. And how she leaned over me, and I told her, Mom, I died. No, you didn't. No, you didn't, mijo. No, you didn't. I said, no, Mom, I died. I said, I know I died. You know, and I told her what I seen. And she looked at me, and she said, how did you know? She said, how did you know? And she broke down. You know, and most people would stop. You know, most people would stop drinking. I did not hesitate, man. I got out of there. I got out of the hospital. I went back to drinking. And shortly after that, I came down with hepatitis. And I had to take a leave from my job. And the guy that I was in business with, he was quite older than me, and he was getting out of the business, and he said he was leaving, and he said the best thing for you to do is to leave. And he told me there were going to be people after me if I didn't leave, and so I really didn't have a choice, you know. And so I left, and I moved to Fresno with my job, and he told me not to come back to the Bay Area for 5 years. He said, the best thing you could do, and I'll tell it, that you went to New Mexico with me, and that was my out. And so I left, and went to Fresno, and it continued. I continued to drink, and I continued to do other substances, and I was in Fresno, and I went to the party for the first Super Bowl that I lived in Fresno, and I made it 2 miles after I left there, and I got pulled over, and I got arrested again for illegal substances in the car, stuff for sale, and a DUI. And I fought it, and I got the minimum, and this continued to happen. It happened a few more times, and the last time it happened, it was ugly. I had gotten I'd gotten custody of both my boys, and it wasn't good. And I'll wrap this up, and I'll get into the recovery. And with my boys, at the end of my drinking and partying, I wouldn't come home. The last few months, I wouldn't come home. And my oldest son was 12 years older than the youngest, and I had them both. So the oldest son had become me. He had become the parent. He's the one that would check on me in the morning. And the way I felt him checking on me was like this and like this to see if I was still breathing. And, he's a fantastic dad today. And that boy, he didn't talk to me after all this ended. And I got arrested the last time. And the youngest, I thought I was going to lose, and I didn't lose him, and I got pretty much out of everything that had happened when I got arrested. I had signed a deal to go to prison, and when they had to present the evidence, I was told by my lawyer that FedEx didn't have the evidence, so they gave me a different deal. And like an idiot, I asked the judge if I could just do the jail time instead, because he wanted to send me to a rehab for 6 months, with all you people there. And you know what? I was supposed to just agree with everything he said and go along with his plan, and I disagreed. So he says, you're going to go to rehab, then you're going to come back here, and we're going to see if you're going to go to jail. Because I opened my mouth. And so I went to rehab, and that's where the journey started for me. I went to rehab, and the guys from H&I would come down there sometimes. And I was there for 6 months. They evaluated me with an anger program, so it turned into a little bit longer. a few months longer. And when I got out of there, just like a lot of people, man, I was starting to feel good. Because in rehab, I did the same thing I did in AA. I went in there and told them I didn't want to participate with the group crap. I didn't call it crap, but I try not to cuss in AA meetings. And I got this, man. I am not going to get loaded or drink anymore. I got this. I know what I'm going to do. We did the first three steps. I'm out of here. My life is going to be totally different. I'm done with all that stuff. So I get out of there, and the day I walk out of there, I walk down the steps, and I'm standing there, and I'm looking, and I'm just standing there, and I go, Ron and Larry's bar is just about a mile that way. And those guys that were talking about that meeting, it's a couple of miles that way. So, hey, do the easy thing. Go have a couple of drinks, quench your thirst, and then go to the meeting. That quick it was gone. Because I didn't have my support group. I didn't know you guys were a support group. I went to one AA meeting before to support a friend, and I just let him know, this isn't for me, man. So, as I was going to take off to the meeting, a couple of the guys drove up in the car, And they said, hey, we're here to pick you up and we're here to take you to St. John's to the meeting. And one of the guys, man, had a patch over his eyes. His name was Matt G, and he had tried to blow his head off and lived. And he looked at me and he says, you can go get that drink after the meeting. And I'm thinking, how did he know? You know? How the hell did he know? He's like, I can't even see. You know? And so we went to the meeting. You know, we went to the meeting, and I told them that I needed a drink. And those guys, man, they said, and there was more guys there when I went there, and they introduced me to all these guys. And those guys hung with me because I needed a drink. And they told me that they could show me a new way to live, you know, if I was willing. You know, so I figured, oh, all right, I'll hang with this. I'll get rid of these guys somehow. And, you know, those guys, man, I couldn't drive a car for 14 years. I'm not going to tell you that I didn't drive a car for 14 years, you know, but I didn't have a license for 14 years. Because every time I got close, I got just short by a few days one time and about a week and a half another time, man, and just couldn't stay sober. And got busted every time. But these guys, they hung with me. They hung with me so bad that they would come over my house, and I kept all the shades closed. It was dark in my house, and they would come over my house. They wouldn't even knock on the door. They would walk through the door. I always had my door locked. You know, I lived in Clovis. What happens in Clovis, you know, back then? You know, and they'd walk right in my house, and I'd go, "What the hell?" And they'd come in there on Friday evening. And they would go in my son's room, and I go, hey, what are you doing? And they'd gather up toys, right? He was 5 years old. And they'd gather up toys and bags, and they'd take them to the Alano Club. And at the Alano Club up there, you know, they had pool out there, and they had a little snack bar out there, and they made hamburgers, and they had the speaker meeting every Friday night. And we went there, and the first time I walked in there, I seen the pool table and stuff, you know, treats and stuff. And I said, oh, this is cool, man. We're going to shoot some pool tonight. They go, no, you're going in there to the speaker meeting, and me and Derek will be out here shooting pool. And so they would buy him stuff, and they'd shoot pool. And one guy would go in there with me, you know, and I'd be bored to death listening to this guy looking at the clock, probably like some of you new guys are doing tonight. You know, and I was a clock watcher, and, you know, the guy talking was full of, you know what, and, he, you know, and he didn't know what he was talking about, and he didn't go through what I went through, and God didn't shortchange him like God shortchanged me. You know, why should I believe in a God, man? He was never there, you know. I asked him for favors, and he never came through, you know, I got a sponsor. I walked into AA, and I got a sponsor. First two meetings I went to, I was supposed to go to meetings after I got out of there, get the court card signed and all that stuff. And the first two meetings I went to, I looked through the window, you know, and I went back and they said, "Did you go to a meeting?" I said, "Yeah, I went to two." And I looked through the window both times. I said, "Oh yeah, I'm not going in there," you know. And then finally, some guy came out and seen me looking in. Invited me in, and I went in, and when that meeting was over, man, they were talking about God, and I said, oh, Bible thumpers, man, you know, and I walked out of there, and one guy came out, and he had a big book in his hand, and he said, hey, he says, hold on for a minute. He kind of stuttered when he talked, because he says, hold on for a minute. He says, here, I want you to take this home. You know, he said, just read it whenever you want to. And I thought, oh, God, this must be their leader, man, you know. And I said, and he's going to hit me for the donation, you know, and all this stuff. And he gave me the book, you know, and he went back inside. And now I thought, okay, when I come back, you know, he's going to hit me up. They're going to want me to pray with them. And I went back, you know, and he invited me to a men's meeting. And so I went to this men's meeting, and he... all these guys, man, they're walking up, you know, and they're walking up, you know, AA meeting, the guy's walking up to you doing that, hey, whoa, wait a minute, you know. And I told him, I said, you guys can shake my hand, but don't think you could effing hug me. You know, and I was scared to death, man. You know, I was scared, and I heard these guys talking like, yeah, I love you, brother, you know, love you too. And I'm thinking, oh, man, what am I into here, you know? And, you know, so my next question is, when's the women's meeting, man? Aren't there any women in here? You know, and they told me about the mixed meetings, and that didn't go well. You know, that just didn't go well. And so I got to know them. And most of them didn't hug me, but this one big guy, he'd come up to me, and his name was Gary Llewellyn, and he's passed away since. And I'd go up, and I'd say, hey, you don't, and he'd just push my arm away, and he'd come in. Well, the guy was a big guy. I could tell you, he was a big guy. And he had did 16 years in penitentiary, and he had white boy written on his neck. And I sized this guy up every meeting I went to, you know. And he was the most gentle, loving, caring person I had met in that damn room, you know. But I'd sit behind him and look at that tattoo. This guy Cruz would sit next to me, and I'd nudge Cruz, you know. And I'd tell Cruz, I said, I bet I could knock him out. You know? And then Jerry would get up, you know, and he'd walk over and and I'd see him walking, I'd start turning, you know, I didn't want him hugging me. And he talked to me, how you doing today, brother? You know, blah, 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 you know, it gets better, brother, you know. And he became my sponsor. I humbled myself and I asked him to become my sponsor. And other guys in there would come up and they would greet me all the time. And I went to a mixed meeting. And the sweet little lady, her name was Darlene, she would come up to me, just a tiny little thing, and she'd come up to me all the time, you know. And she told me, the pain will go away, you know. And one more time, I'm going, how the hell did she know, you know? You know, she says, and you won't feel what you're feeling right now if you keep coming to these meetings, you know. And so, you know, they invite me to come to their business meeting. I said, what's business meeting? They says, well, you know, it's after the Monday night. At that time, it was after the Monday night meeting. And I says, what time is it? And they said, I can't remember back then, because they switched all the time. It was like 7:30 or something like that. He said, just come and you could see how things are run, you know, and if you like it, you know, you like it. If you don't, you don't. You don't have to worry about it. So he says, well, come to the meeting on a Monday night. You know, he said, but come to the AA meeting first. I said, no, I watch Monday Night Football, man. Yeah. And so I came to the business meeting, and that was the first time I got railroaded in AA, and pretty soon I was the secretary of the Monday Night meeting. And didn't watch Monday Night Football anymore and had a huge resentment. So anyway, you know, I started working steps with this guy, and you guys hear it all the time. The only one you have to work for perfectly is the first one. And I swear, just somebody in this room tell me I'm not the only guy in this room that after I did the first step, he told me to go back and do it again. Who else flunked the first step? Just one hand. Thank you. Thank you. You know, and so I did. I had this guy, man, he was 100%, you know. And in the second step, I knew something was going on. You know, all of a sudden, I started to hope there was some kind of a God, you know. I never read that second step right when I first came in. You know, it says, restore us to sanity. And I always was thinking, restore us to insanity. I really did. And he pointed this stuff out to me, man. And I sat in that meeting, and I seen this guy that tried to blow his head off and live through it. And he became a circuit speaker. He's, I mean, everywhere, out of country, in country, That was my grant sponsor. And the guy that did all these years in different prisons, you know, he was just this big teddy bear that sat there and talked about life on life's terms and talked about, you know, I said, there goes that damn guy right there, man. And he'd hold my hand and he goes, I know, brother. He said, I'd whoop his ass too, but we don't do that anymore. We don't act like that. It's like, how do they know, you know? And you know what, man? I mean, they took me through these steps, and the third step was the hardest for me. You know, it really was, you know. I didn't know how to pray, you know, and my grand sponsor just said, just go home every day and ask God to reveal himself to you. And so that was my prayer. That was my prayer until the light came on. You know, and I realized that, you know, he was being revealed through me, through you guys. I seen him through you guys. I seen things happening for you guys. And then things start happening for me. You know. And then that, you know, thorough moral inventory. He had me do four of them in the first 5 years. You know, and thank God for that, man. You know, we went over those steps four times in the first 5 years. And we got thorough. We got honest. And it got painful. And, you know, and it hurt. You know, and I think our mama said, relieve me of bondage of self. I had so much guilt and remorse. What I did with my mom and what I did with my kids. And you know, it was lifted. It was lifted through those steps. You know, I brought some books with me today. I stole this one from my wife. I read it every morning. It was collecting so much dust, I figured somebody better pick it up. Pick it up and read it. Hey, but that's why they got the ninth step, right? So, and I want to read today, okay? Today's reading, Let Go, Let God. Higher power helped me to understand to let go. It does not mean to stop caring. It means I can't do it. I can do it for someone else. I can't do it for someone else. To let go is not to enable, but to allow learning from natural consequences. You guys allowed me learning from natural consequences. I loved when I read this today. Okay? Now I'm going to start throwing books at you guys. I'm one of those guys, you newcomers. You know, this one is on 6 and 7. Okay. After I did 5, you know, I told my sponsor, I says, it has in the book, you know, I said, it's just a couple of little sentences there, you know. And I says, and it's not doing anything for me. He said, well, get into the solution. So this was the solution. I got dropped the rock. You talk about a book that will make you look at yourself. I owned a business, a legal business. A legal business. And I took this to work with me all the time. Because there was days, just for an example, there was days, I don't know, was it you that called me up or somebody else, and I says, how's your day going? And I said, I've started it over 7 times today. But I got this with me. This is my on-the-job Bible because it points out all my character defects. You know, and I will not go after that customer and do what these thoughts in my head are telling me to do to them. Okay? So, I want to read something real quick. Okay, where am I? Right here. This was so profound to me and so easy. It says the principle of the 12-step recovery are the opposites. The principles of the 12-step recovery are the opposites of our character defects. That did wonders for me. you know, I had a new way to look at it. When I my character defects, you know, start coming out, I have a whole new way to manage them. Okay, and then this is my go-to. You know, for you that have been around and you that haven't been around, page 99 is St. Francis Prayer. Okay? You know, read it. If you're new and got a 12 and 12, read the St. Francis Prayer on 99. Because when I get upset, you know, or I don't want to listen to her anymore, whoa, then I look at this and it says, it's better to be understanding than understood. Okay? Damn it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, right there, you know? Right there, man. You know, why does it have to be so simple and so plain? You know, yeah. Okay, 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes. Okay, you let me know. So anyway, you know, it's been a journey. There's a lot more to the story. There's a lot more to the recovery. Yeah, I couldn't have did it without you guys. You know, we've been here for a year, a little over a year. And we came here to this fellowship. It was speaker night. We were sitting in a motel room. And we were looking for houses. And we came here, months before we moved here. And I said, there's got to be a meeting somewhere around. We came to a speaker meeting, and it was, when it was over, and I wish I remember who they were, some of these guys here walked up to me, and some of the women walked up to you, and they introduced themselves, and you know, and they did what we do. And that's why, even though we live over, you know, Santa Maria, Orchid, whatever you want to call it, I still try to get over here once a week. And you gave it away, and now I have to give it away. And that's how it works here. You know, we have to be selfless. We have to remain teachable. You know, if you're teachable, man, you know, you got a chance. You know, I want to, when I pass away, I want people to say, you know, not that I died sober, that I lived sober. Mm-hmm. That means so much to me. You know, I hate birthdays, not sober birthdays, belly button birthdays. I don't even, you know, I don't even celebrate them. I don't like celebrating them. I mean, I've always been that way. But A birthdays, I love that day because I know what it did for me. I know what it did for me. I was able to lay with my sponsor, his sponsor, when they were passing away, and, you know, and tell them how grateful I was for those two men. I was able to lay with my mother when she was passing away and spend 4 months with her. And I was coming up on 20 years. And she made it. You see that 20-year chip. And then she said she wanted to make it for my birthday, which was the very next month. Who gets sober a month before their birthday? And she made it. Not to my birthday, but to that month. And when she made it to that month, I was able to talk to her and tell her what a great mom she had been. You know, and I was able to, just to let her know how grateful I was for her. I mean, she was the best, man. She was the best loving, tough mother who once jumped on my back and threw a couple of right shots to the head, you know. You know, and I never, ever disrespected her like that again. You know, and in this program, you know, you guys are my people, and I want to read something to you, and I will be done, because this is how I feel. If I could find it. This is a reading that a guy that was dying, who they had to break me and him up a couple of times in early sobriety, in AA, and he had gotten cancer, and we had became friends, and he asked me to walk through it with him. And I used to read this. He really liked this, and I used to read this to him every night before I left. I never missed a night. And when he died, we buried him on my belly button birthday. And the guy says, when I die, I want to die just like we are this evening, talking with each other, and that's how he died. just like he said, like he scripted it out, and that's how he died. And then I called his family. And the last 15 years of my life, for me, the last 28 years of my life has been rich and meaningful. I have had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments, because that is life. But also, I have known a great deal of joy and peace that is the handmaiden of an inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends, and with my AA friends, and an unusual quality of fellowship. For to these people, I am truly related. First through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by, working together, sharing our experience with one another, and also sharing a mutual trust, understanding, and love, without strings, without obligations, we acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more aloneness with an awful ache so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. That ache is gone and never need return again. Now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted and needed and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we have been given the keys of the kingdom. Yeah. So, thank you guys for putting up with Armando.
Oh man, let's give Al a round, huh?